accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Saturday, August 29th, 2015. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mendel with Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mendel is once again vacationing, which has happened many times.
There we go. We better now? You have to, you know, Richard Pollock here filling in the host chair for Drew Mendel. There's always at least three technical problems per show here. And might as well get that one right off the top. Ezzy Ginsberg's joining me. He's going to get a working mic after I stole his mic. Good morning, everyone. August 29, 2015. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We have an interesting show for you today. Kristen Oldland of the Calgary Herald will be joining us in about 10 minutes' time to talk about Mark Giordano's contract extension with the Calgary Flames, as well as the prospective arena project in Calgary, which is going to cost basically $4 billion. And then later on the show, we're going to have Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch on to talk about the busy offseason in Columbus. After an injury-riddled 2014-2015 season, the Columbus Blue Jackets are hoping for a healthy roster and have added talent to the stable, basically by way of the big trade for Brandon Saad earlier in the offseason. And we're going to discuss many other contract extensions, and Dustin Byfuglien will be the main focus of our attention during the first hour of the show. But at the end of the show, Ezzy, we're going to have Bernstein's Deli on for the launch of Le Burger Week, in fact, bringing in burgers for us to eat, give it a little taste test, and get the city ramped up and ready to go for Le Burger Week. How you doing this morning? You got a mic now?
I got a mic. I'm doing well. And it's good to be here, first of all. And it's good that Drew's not here, because when Drew's not here, it always seems that we get more mic time and have a better overall time. But yeah, it's going to be a good show today, hopefully, Richie, and it's obviously going to be a good end to the show, because as you mentioned, when you get to taste test a burger live on air for the first time before it's even been released to the public, you know, it's going to be a pretty good show.
Who gets more vacation? Like, who gets the most vacation time in the station? Because I think Drew's up there.
Well, I think probably the lawman. If we're talking about other shows, if we're talking about a legal curve, I would say, yeah, Drew goes on vacation quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, he's taking it easy. We don't mind filling in for him, and I mean, it's certainly not difficult. But at the end of the day, I mean, the guy should show up once in a while. But we'll leave that for another day when Drew's back and then steals our mic time. Dustin Byfuglien's going to be the subject of a pretty significant kind of a detailed look at as to the fact that he's unsigned, what he possibly could sign for, what his value would be, both contract-wise and maybe on the market in a trade, because he's not yet signed to a contract extension, is he, with his contract expiring July 1st of 2016, like Andrew Ladd. But because we've got Kristen Oldland coming up at 9:10, what we're going to do is talk about the Giordano contract, not only evaluate that, but also evaluate it as it relates to the, you know, prospective Byfuglien contract / current negotiations, we believe, or you'd think that there are some negotiations going on. And then we'll jump in, after Kristen's on, we'll jump into an analysis of Dustin Byfuglien. So, as he marked Giordano, signs a big deal this week, six-year extension, 6.75 annual cap hit. Does any part of this surprise you, this extension? And I should qualify it, he's under contract this season. So this contract kicks in after next season. Next season, he's on a cap hit of 4.02. Talk about great value. His contract will kick in next season, at which time, when the season begins, he will be 33 years old. So it's 6 years, taken from 33 to 39, and it's 6.75 per year. What are your thoughts?
Love the contract, and that's because I love Mark Giordano. I mean, I think if he plays the entire season, he's a Norris Trophy winner. Not just Norris Trophy candidate, I think he wins it. The way he was playing was exceptional, and he really elevated the rest of that team, Richie. Not only that decor, but he elevated the entire team. And, you know, as we know, defensemen take a little bit longer to mature, and Giordano has been the Flames' top defenseman for quite some time, and they kind of moved on from the kind of Jay Bouwmeester, Robin Regier era, and he's been their number one defenseman for quite some time. So as far as the amount of years and the amount of money he got, I think you could even argue Giordano could probably make a little bit more money per year based on the fact that he's established himself, I think, at the very least, as a top 10 defenseman. And last year, you could say at times, and I guess that's what I'm saying, yeah, that he was the best defenseman in the NHL. Both offensively and defensively, Giordano has the full package. And for the Calgary Flames, who for years have been struggling to find their identity and have been in a rebuild, this team was able to make the playoffs last year, and it's because of how good that D-Core was. Sure, there are a couple guys named Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, in addition to, you know, others. Yuri Hudler had a great year last year.
Yep.
But, Richie, this team was built around that defense, and, you know, they've got some other good defensemen there, too. Troy, you know, Bodie and all these guys. And Giordano was really the guy who, I believe, elevated the rest of the team, and even when he went out, this team was still able to keep it together.
Well, that's the thing about the Alberta teams now, is you look at the back end of Calgary, and you have Giordano locked up. You just signed Dougie Hamilton to the extension after trading for him. You mentioned Brody. I mean, a really good young defenseman, and they have other guys in there as well, Chris Russell and Dennis Wyman. I mean, that's a stacked defense, arguably the best defense in the National Hockey League. And then you mentioned Sean Monahan up the middle. They're going to have Sam Bennett. I mean, that Edmonton rivalry with the talent they have is going to be, I think, tremendous. But I think it's interesting, a lot of good points you made, and I think Bob Hartley echoed those sentiments. He said this week after the signing, as a coaching staff, when you sit with your captain and the message that's got to go back, as a coaching staff, when you sit with your captain and the message that's got to go back to the players in the locker room is exactly the message that you've given, you cannot put a value on this. Or if he's coming in with a concern, it's the same. No games being played. Honest, upfront. That's the way it should be. That's the way it is. For anyone who knows Gio, in reference to Mark Giordano, there are no surprises. That's him. And that's quoted from an article of George Johnson. And the idea is that he's not a high-maintenance guy, is he? He signs a contract. I agree with you. Could have gotten more in free agency. You know, sure, you say maybe he takes less off the top because he signed 33 through 39. But Andre Sekera, and I was talking to Remus and Joel this week on the roundtable, Andre Sekera signs for 5.5 a year. And the guy's not in the same ballpark as Mark Giordano, and you see the difference. Sure, older, but quality of play, I think they're really not comparable. So I want to leave it there. We're going to take a quick early break. We're going to have Kristen Olin on to the Calgary Herald to break this down further and to talk about that massive arena project. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 12.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, August 29, 2015. Before we hit the phone line, this segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. We're now joined on the line by Kristen Odlin of the Calgary Herald. Kristen, we tried to do a pre-tape with her. She's been very patient with us. Thank you very much for your patience, Kristen. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, pretty good. How are you guys?
Oh, we're okay. We're doing pretty well, and we wanted to have you on, Kristen, today to talk about, obviously, the Mark Giordano contract extension, which was the big news in Calgary, but also kind of last week's news about the stadium and, well, the project for the CFL stadium and the obviously, prospective NHL arena. But let's start with Giordano. Kristen, did the timing of the contract extension and the fact that he's signed for another year, did that surprise you at all, or did you expect this contract to get done in the offseason?
It came as a bit of a surprise, just because how quickly that they got it done. I think it was you know, it was a good thing because, it, you know, having that, you know, it's like when there's a guy, a big guy, especially like Mark Giordano, who has a contract hanging over his head for the entire season, you kind of want to get that done. And Brad Treleaven was upfront about that the whole summer, you know, kind of saying that this is one of his priorities. Like, this is his number one priority, is getting Mark Giordano signed. And you can see why. I mean, he's the heartbeat of the team, and he definitely was last year. So the timing-wise, yeah, it kind of surprised me a little bit, but not really in the grand scheme of things, because, you know, knowing the type of guy that Mark Giordano is, and knowing the relationship that he has built with the Calgary Flames, he was, you know, the negotiations went pretty smoothly. I think the biggest thing was his sixth year. That was kind of the last year in his term. That was kind of the one year that they were concerned about. They wanted to get to that sixth year so that he's taken care of, and he thinks it's going to be his last contract, but you know, you never know. You know, he will be 32 in
October, yeah.
September.
Yeah.
And you know, so he's going to be a little bit older when the contract does kick in, but I don't think that's a bad thing. He's the leader that the Flames want all their young guys to emulate, and you can see why.
Kristen, when you look at how Brad Treleaven has done this summer, trading for Dougie Hamilton right before the draft or at the draft, signing Michael Frolik, obviously Jets fans weren't too happy about that, and then this extension with Mark Giordano, is it safe to say that he's probably had the best summer of any NHL GM?
Yeah, he's a genius, right? I mean, you know, you look at the moves that he's made, and yeah, he's sort of looking that way. I mean, obviously, it's a new, this is his second summer with the Calgary Flames. He's made a couple of really good moves. And keep in mind, he has Brian Burke as his kind of, mm-hmm. you know, overseeing some decision-making. And there's a lot of guys in that organization that kind of have an impact. But yes, I mean, he's made some very, very smart deals. You know, he did upfront say that, like, Mark knows that there's many mouths to feed. And by saying that, he means contracts of Johnny Gaudreau and contracts of Sean Monahan are going to be up at the end of this season. So there's a lot of guys looking for money next year. So keeping that in mind, they negotiated with Giordano, and I think they really got I wouldn't say a steal of a deal, because he's getting, you know, he's getting paid, well paid, $40.5 million over the next 6 years. So, you know, he's definitely looked pretty darn good. And you know, there's been some moves and some decisions that he's made that maybe, you know, you look at it and you're kind of like, well, I don't know if that really panned out. But he's a young GM, and he's certainly beginning to earn the respect of the hockey world, that's for sure.
Kristen, you cover the Calgary Flames, so you know how good Mark Giordano is. And we talked about this during the first segment. I think people that didn't get a chance to watch Mark Giordano on a night-in, night-out basis just didn't know how well he was playing this year. Do you think it's safe to say that if he's healthy, finishes the season, he gets the Norris Trophy?
There's a good possibility. I mean, he certainly was going down that road earlier this season before he suffered a biceps tear at the end of May, February. He definitely is one of those guys that he's not very flashy, and you know, he was undrafted, and it took him a while to kind of get his career jump started with the Calgary Flames. And I know that was kind of a situational thing. You know, there was Dion Phaneuf at one point, and Jay Bouwmeester and Robin Regier, so it was kind of tough to crack the blue line at one point. But you know, he's really evolved in this organization, and yeah, you see it. I mean, I see it night in and night out, so I can kind of see the little things that he does and the way he treats people and the way he impacts the dressing room, and he does all the right things, and you always hear that. You always hear GM say that, but he really does. So aside from all of the point production and the impact, I mean, he's healthy and stays healthy for the entire season. He's definitely going to be another Norris Trophy candidate for sure.
Joined by Kristen Odland of the Calgary Herald, talk about the Mark Giordano extension. Mm-hmm. Kristen, you know, you talk about all the great qualities, and I really do like his game. Is there any concern about the fact that three of the past 4 years he's missed about 20 games or so?
Yeah, it's the injury factor is kind of something that's kind of plagued him, unfortunately. And I think it's just the way he plays the game. I don't think it's He doesn't play the game in an unsmart way. He's very smart, but he also plays very hard. So, yeah, I mean, you look at that and you think, oh, well, he hasn't had a full season, you know, in a while. But I think it's just because that's kind of how he plays the game. The way that Calgary blocked shots and kind of got in front of the net and, you know, kind of their hard work style, I think that that kind of played into it as well, too. But, you know, maybe that's a knock on him, but, I mean, he's always worked really hard and kind of bounced back. So he's never really fallen off because of it. So it's tough to say if that's a product of just the way he plays or if that's kind of if he's one of those guys that's just prone to injuries, but I think it's probably the former.
You look at the talent on the back end, and I think there's, you know, without question, this is probably a top five defense, and you can maybe argue better. You look at Chris Russell. He had a great year last year, Kristen. He's at $2.6 million coming up on UFA status after the season. Has the team engaged in discussions with him at all, or was focused on Giordano first and prioritized the other players later on?
I think the focus is Giordano, especially in the off season, and they had a few free agents to take care of. Michael Backlund was signed earlier this summer, and obviously they signed Dougie Hamilton, another young defenseman on their core. So I don't know if Chris Russell, obviously it's a priority. He's been a guy that's really blossomed in Calgary. He's really found a role and, with St. Louis, he kind of got edged out. So then he came mm-hmm. to Calgary and was given an opportunity and was given more opportunities. And now he's one of the most shot-blocking defensemen, has blocked the most shots among defensemen in the league. So he's really, I assume that talks have started. Earlier in the season, we kind of talked to him about it, and he said that he wasn't even thinking about it. So that was last season. So, I mean, I'm sure talks have started, but nothing really concrete.
Kristen, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Calgary Next Arena project, and I know just from
reading... It cost you $10 to say that.
Exactly, and I know from reading in your newspaper, I know the Calgary Herald has covered it quite a bit, and I know it's something that in Calgary it's become a bit of a divisive issue there. I guess, can you let our listeners know, I guess, some background about the project and I guess what the timeline is as far as the advancing the project?
Sure. The timeline is, well, there's no timeline right now because they have no money. they basically put forth a proposal a couple of weeks ago just to Ken King. This has been in the works for a number of years, a long time, but Ken King finally put the pen to paper and gave a presentation along with a couple of the city council members to explain his vision of a new $900 million stadium plus arena plus field house. So basically a one-stop shop for all of your sporting needs. But, it's a vision at this point. The land that they've decided is on the west end of downtown. So if you're familiar with Calgary, it's the Greyhound Station kind of area when you first come into downtown. So the opposite end of where the Saddle Dome currently is, still in the downtown core and still accessible by train and all that kind of stuff. They would have to reroute some of the roads. But, you know, there's quite a significant... there's a lot of questions. The land that they're dealing with has a significant amount of creosote. It was a chemical used to treat railway ties. And so the land is quite, needs to be fixed up. And so a lot of money is going to have to go into that, which they, you know, didn't really present in their vision a couple mm-hmm. of weeks ago. So, I mean, there's lots of incurring costs, I think, that are going to have to, go along with it. There's a lot of other priorities in the city of Calgary. Their argument is that this is a priority as well to the stadium, or the McMahon Stadium is one of the oldest in the leagues. And then, of course, the Scotiabank Saddle Dome is going to be soon to be one of the oldest NHL buildings in the league. So it's nice, and you see what's happening up in Edmonton and how that kind of materialized, but it's been a long time coming. There's progress, I guess, in the sense that there's a vision now, and kind of everybody knows what he wants and what the Calgary Flames Sports and Entertainment Group want. But it's going to be a long time before they actually, break ground, I think. Ken King said that he would be happy if in 5 years they were cutting the ribbon, but again, they don't have any money, so they've got a long way to go.
Is this the right time economically, excuse me, Kristen, and politically to try and launch this project?
I mean, in some ways, you can look at it that way. I mean, obviously, the NDP government in Alberta, you know, this is puts a lot of pressure on them, and you know, nobody wants to be the leader to knock down this project like this, especially when the city needs it, and it could arguably jumpstart the economy. You know, that was one of the big focuses and conversation points from that presentation was, you know, how is this going to jumpstart the economy in Calgary? And, you know, yes and no. I mean, it's going to cost a lot of money to build it, but we'll see what happens.
And final question for you, alluded to it, Chris, and appreciate your time this morning. How much of a factor is this Edmonton arena almost being completed having on the Calgary wanting to get started?
Yeah, you look at your neighbors to the north and you think, oh, well, we want what they got and why can't we get it? So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely, they battled for a long, long time to get that arena deal in place, though. So, you know, they're probably, I know a lot of people made that comparison, you know, why can't it just happen the way Edmonton's happened? But, you know, they're going to probably learn from a lot of mistakes that Edmonton made and kind of go from there. So, I mean, it is very timely that, you know, Edmonton gets this new complex and, you know, Calgary's been crying for it for quite some time. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely timely.
Kristen Olin of the Calgary Herald, thank you very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem.
Kristen, hold one second, though. Before we let you go, can you just do us one favor and make sure that you say hi to our pal George Johnson for us? I guess not.
That was amazing.
All right. She really had to go, Rich.
Well, Ezzy, I mean, you know, we had her on for quite a while, and you had to throw in the George Johnson, and she didn't like that.
She hung up.
That's a highlight there. We have to save that for the...
we'll play that for George Johnson.
Yeah, we'll have to play that for George Johnson. When we come back, we're going to break down the Dustin Byfuglien contract, prospective contract. Mark Giordano's contract may be a factor, but I think one of the biggest things you want to talk about is the distraction factor that Brad Treliving referenced, and so did Bob Harley. We'll touch on that and get into Dustin Byfuglien's contract value after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
It's cleared on the left side for Ladd. Ladd has some room. Byfuglien, 2-on-1. Ladd in on goal. Fires. Save. Rebound. Scores! Dustin Byfuglien! Huge 2 points. And Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, best players coming through.
You hear Dustin Byfuglien from Andrew Ladd on that clip pulled up by Rory. He's doing a great job here this morning. Ezra Ginsberg. I'm Richard Pollock, filling in the host chair for Drew Mindell, and you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment, we're going to break down Dustin Byfuglien's contract value. And I think, I want to get into his reliability, because I one thing about Andrew Ladd, and we broke this down a few weeks ago, Andrew Ladd's a very reliable player. He's hardly ever injured. Dustin Byfuglien is probably more reliable than you may think, and you're gonna tweet from the Legal Curve account and tweet out the article, Ezzy, but probably more reliable than you would think, but a little bit more injury prone lately. So let's break down the numbers, and that's the fact that since 2007-2008, Dustin Byfuglien has missed 43 games. So that sounds like, oh, 43 games. In reality, that if you take out the 4 games from the suspension for last season when he crossed, was it JT Miller, Ezzy, on the New York Rangers,
yep,
in front of the net in Winnipeg, that's a little bit fewer than 5 games per season. So really not that much. But of those games, many have happened since he came to Winnipeg, those missed games due to injury. So I think some people have concerns about the fact that Dustin Byfuglien, when you're talking about a contract extension in his 30s, early to mid-30s, may very well be spending more time up in the press box due to injury. Does that concern you?
I think it has to, Rich. And I think you're right. You mentioned, you know, this is the second article you've written this summer. The first one being Andrew Ladd, of course. And Andrew Ladd has been an Iron Man throughout his NHL career. But especially, Rich, since coming over from Atlanta, Andrew Ladd has taken on more of an offensive role, and his role has changed. Mm-hmm. Andrew Ladd will drop the gloves. He'll lay a body check. He plays a physical style of game, but I think the physical role he's played has changed. Dustin Byfuglien, on the other hand, I think it's increased. And if you look at last year and how successful the Jets were, in many games, Buff was laying out a big hit or three or four hits. Sometimes he was taking out two guys at once. But the point I'm trying to make, I guess, is that he still plays a extremely physical style of hockey.
And has, I think, more so the past, since Paul Maurice came on board, he's played a more physical style.
Right, and some of that has to do, I believe, with the switch from forward back to defense, and the fact that when Buff is engaged physically, he's at his most effective. So, to answer your question, I do have concerns that, you know, throughout his career, you know, and as you mentioned, Byfuglien has had some injuries that he's had to deal with, but he hasn't had major injuries, and he's missed less games than maybe you'd think based on how he's played, as you just mentioned, Rich. But I think, you know, as you get into your mid-30s, as you've mentioned, yeah, it starts to wear on you. You know, those physical type of players, you know, it begins to weigh on them. So I think if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff and you're Craig Heisinger and you're talking about a contract extension with Buff, you're definitely factoring that in. I think you're a lot more comfortable signing him to a 3 or 4 year deal than you are a 5 or 6 year deal, because you're a little bit worried that, put it this way, Richie, when with Dustin Byfuglien, you're expecting more than just goals and assists, and you're expecting more than just zone possession, and you're expecting more than, you're expecting Dustin Byfuglien to have an impact physically in games. Because as we've seen time and time again, nobody in the NHL can handle Buff physically.
Nobody can.
He's 6'5", 275 pounds. He's built like a linebacker, and a big linebacker. And if he wants to run you over, it's not a question of if he will run you over. It's, are you going to get out of the way? Are you going to get up? Is he going to take another guy with you? I mean, you know, it's no joke. I mean, the guy is a truck on the ice. Plus, he can score goals and have impacts on the game in different ways. So,
well, I want to touch on that because his versatility is an issue that I want to transition to. Before mentioning that, as Byfuglien's 30 years old, okay, when he's signing this contract next season or this season, whenever it kicks in is what I mean. He'll be 31 years old when Giordano's contract kicks in. The first season after his contract kicks in next year, he'll be 33. So there's a difference there, 2 years. But we know that Byfuglien plays, not that Giordano doesn't play a physical game, but Byfuglien plays a more physical game. So you talk about that versatility. How much value do you put on the fact that he can play an effective forward and defense role, creating offense in both positions and being able to play in an offensive role on the power play, both down low and up high?
I think you have to put a high value on that. And I think that was a very good point that you made in the article. Because not only is it exceptionally difficult to switch from defense to forward, but Buff has done that for basically 3 years now. And we know that when Paul Maurice came in, and it was all about, okay, well, Dustin Byfuglien's going to play forward. I mean, we're not going to go through this anymore. He's going to play forward. And then because of the injuries they had last year, he played defense and he did a great job. But
I think also some of that was Paul Maurice is the boss. He's going to play him where he wants to play him. And then when he decides where he wants to go, he'll go. But the idea was Byfuglien wasn't going to determine that himself.
That's correct, Rich. You're right. And it's one thing to be able to play forward and defense, but it's one thing to do both well. And I think he does do both well. And I think, you know, we've talked about this a lot on this show, Richie. I think he's better suited as a defenseman because I think he, not only does he prefer to play defense, but I think he is more effective as a defenseman. And I think you have to factor this in. You know, I know we're going to get into the comparables in the article a little bit later. And I do think that Mark Giordano, that contract will have somewhat of an impact on Dustin Byfuglien's contract. But I don't know if that's the best comparable because of the fact that Mark Giordano isn't someone who also plays forward. He's an excellent defenseman. But as you mentioned in the article, how many players can do this these days? Brent Burns is one guy that you mentioned in the article, you know, that pops into your mind.
Yeah.
But there aren't many players that can do it these days. You could count them on one hand.
Yeah, you can absolutely count them on one hand. And one thing about the article is I want to note in the final number that we come up with, it's based on fair market value as if Byfuglien hits free agency. I think Mark Giordano took a discount staying with the Calgary Flames, and I think Chris Nolan of the Calgary Herald last segment alluded to just that. I mean, again, back to Andre Sekera. You put him on the market, he gets $5.5 million per year for 6 years. As I note in the article, you look at Andre Sekera's point totals, it's crazy. He scored more than 4 goals once in his career. So if you think that Giordano is going to go to the market, get $6.75 million, a GM in the market in the free in UFA status, when you get to UFA status and they're only giving up money, will overpay. They'll worry about the problem later on. And I guess the question is, does Byfuglien like it in Winnipeg enough to maybe take less, either term or money? I think probably term is going to be the issue, if it's not already. A la Giordano taking less money per year, knowing that Monahan, Gaudreau, and the rest of the guys are eventually going to come up for big contracts.
It's the big question.
Similar with Shifley, Lowry, and Trouba.
And that's where we're at right now, and I think that's probably why we haven't maybe seen anything happen with either Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien, because there is this big divide between years and the amount of money. And these are big contracts. And, you know, You mentioned some of the other players in Calgary, Sean Monahan, and then, you know, it's a good analogy. You got Shifley and Trouba and other players in Winnipeg. So I think when you're looking at Dustin Byfuglien, though, these factors are huge. Once you get into the advanced stats, as you did in the article, Rich, then you can really break down how good of a player he is. And, I mean, he is an exceptional player, but as we know, he's an enigma because of the fact that, you know, he has the ability to, you know, lose it mentally. And, you know, he struggles at times with his fitness, even though he's proven in the last 2 years that he's lost the weight and he's quicker than he was maybe when he first came to Winnipeg. So I think right now you're still looking at you know, we'll get into the final numbers later, but you're still looking at a guy that you could argue should be one of the highest paid guys in the league.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're breaking down Dustin Byfuglien's free agent value. And when you look at Dustin Byfuglien's free agent value, Ezzy, I think you have to take a look at the roster construction of the Winnipeg Jets. And ever since Jacob Trouba has become an effective defenseman, which was almost immediately when he came into the league, the Jets have had overload on the right side. And that was before the Bogosian-Kane trade. It was Bogosian, Byfuglien, and Trouba on the right side. Then you trade Bogosian and you bring back Tyler Myers, you have that same issue. Issue, quote-unquote. In reality, it's a luxury probably more than it is an issue. But I think it is an issue. Can the Jets, Ezzy, afford to spend big money on Byfuglien? We'll talk about the final number, but the $5, $6, $7, $8 million range when they're paying Myers. I know his cap hit's higher than the salary, but Myers over $5 million, and then Trouba's going to be getting a big number. Can they afford to do that when conceivably all three of those players perform best on the right side and there aren't just enough minutes to go around?
I don't know if you can, Richie. And there's no question the Jets are stronger on the right side than they are on the left side. And it'll help that a guy like Josh Morrissey is going to be in the NHL within the next 2 years. It remains to be seen if he plays significant minutes this year, but he'll definitely be in the lineup full-time within the next 2 years, so that'll help because Josh Morrissey is their top defensive prospect. And a left-side guy. So when you look at Dustin Byfuglien and how much Jacob Trouba is going to make in his next contract, regardless if it's a bridge contract, he's going to make a significant amount of money 3 or 4 years from now after that bridge contract. And as you mentioned, Tyler Myers makes quite a bit of money. It's going to be an issue because Tobias Enstrom is the highest paid player on the team right now, right? For now. Once Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien sign, that'll change.
Also, I'll just clarify. Enstrom is on a $5.7 million cap it for the next 3 seasons. Myers at $5.5 million for the next 4 seasons.
And you also have to factor in, Richie, not only the roster composition, but within that is that the Jets and True North have not been a ceiling team. They've always been a budget team.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't expect the Jets to spend 71 or next year, if it's 73 or 74, whatever it is, you shouldn't expect the Jets always to spend every single dollar that they have, right? So it's a tricky situation. And I think I speak for both of us, Rich, when I say that I think we're a little bit surprised that there hasn't been at least one contract extension. Andrew Ladd was the contract that everyone expected mm-hmm. to be done by now, mm-hmm. but now we've got 2 weeks to go, 2.5 weeks to go before training camp. And I'm not saying that this is going to be an issue that's going to linger around the team, because I don't think that that's going to be the case. But I think that these negotiations have been a little bit more complicated than I think maybe the average observer or us even would have expected, because of the fact that it's a given that the Jets want to sign Andrew Ladd long-term. He's their captain. But with Buff, that's been the question for a long time now. Is he going to sign a 3 or 4 year deal? Does he want a 5 or 6 year deal? And are the Jets willing to sign him to a 3 or 4 year deal? And how much money is he going to make per year? So it seems like, you know, it seems pretty easy. But when you're talking about Ladd and Buff, guys, as you mentioned, that are in their early 30s, mm-hmm. whose skills are going to diminish in their mid 30s, it's a little bit trickier than that.
Two things I want to talk about before we go to break. Can you move? Well, you can. You can, unless they were just pushed back. But would you move as the one of Trouba, Myers, or Bufflin to the left side, say Bufflin were to sign, in order to have that top four be Enstrom, Trouba, Bufflin, Myers, as opposed to have the weaker left side guys right now with the stronger right side guys? I mean, aside from Enstrom.
Well, it's an interesting question, Rich, and I think you do if you believe that the defenseman is going to be effective enough on that opposite side.
And Trouba and Bufflin have hardly, if at all, played on the left side. Bogosian moved over a bit.
Yep.
Not Myers.
And when Tyler Myers came over from Buffalo in the Evander Kane trade, Tyler Myers and Tobias Enstrom had an excellent chemistry, and that's why they were paired up. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised if those D pairings change this year, and that's because the Jets have 10 defensemen on one-way contracts. That's including Grant Clitsam. I wouldn't be surprised, Rich, if they do decide to move someone on the right side to the left side, because I think ideally you probably want Mark Stewart and Ben Sherratt on your third pairing, or some combination of that.
You're paying Mark Stewart $2.65. He's going to be in your top six. He's going to be on your left side.
Right.
Right? So
you got you have some issues, because you'd easily put Tobias Enstrom with Tyler Myers again, and then, you know, Jacob Trouba's been with Mark Stewart. But you got to wonder, you know, do they maybe put Tobias Enstrom with Jacob Trouba and then maybe put Buff and Myers together? And
especially after seeing the Chicago Blackhawks win the Cup with four defensemen, really.
Right.
Right? They just logged the big-time ice time on the four defensemen. Before we go to break, I thought it was an interesting comment by Bob Hartley after the Giordano contract. I want to read you the quote and get your take before we go to break. He said, "Gio is a pillar for us," in reference to Giordano. "Someone we can count on. Brad," in reference to Brad Treliving, their GM, "has done a great job," and this is a key part of it. "We're going to get to camp, and our captain," similar to Ladd being the captain here, "along with many of our veterans, are set contractually. There are no disagreements, no distractions, and no confusion." So, I mean, you can hear all you want about the Jets saying there's not going to be distractions, not going to be confusion, all that. But you hear Bob Hartley in another city, a playoff team from last year, basically say it would have been a distraction had Giordano not signed. What are your thoughts on that in reference to Bufflin and Ladd?
Yeah, it's an interesting comment from Bob Hartley. And you're never going to hear a coach, especially Paul Maurice here in Winnipeg, say that, you know, and he's going to get those questions. If either of these players isn't signed, Richie, before the preseason starts, and that's only 3 weeks away now, you're going to have those questions asked. And Paul Maurice is obviously going to deflect the answer and say that it's not going to be a distraction. But I think it has to be somewhat of a distraction, especially for the management. I don't think it's a distraction for the players. I don't believe it is. I think at the end of the day, Richie, the agents are the ones that negotiate. And I don't think Andrew Ladd is going to change how he approaches towards training camp and how he prepares for the preseason games going into the regular season. But Bob Hartley's comments, it makes you kind of think that, you know, once you do have all your players under contract, or the veterans with contract extensions, you kind of know that, okay, we're ready to play hockey here. There isn't any of that off-ice stuff that needs to be taken care of. So I imagine, you know, Andrew Ladd and Dustin Bufflin would like to know what their long-term future is, but, I mean, it's a little bit complicated like that, and that's because of the era we live in with the salary cap and the fact that the salary cap didn't go up by much. I think that's something that hasn't been talked about enough. I think if the salary cap is $2 or $3 million more, you got to think, especially some of these UFAs are probably signed. Okay. Some of the guys that are waiting for contract extensions are signed, so...
Canadian dollar doesn't help either, I don't think. I mean, granted, that play is going to play a factor into the cap and everything else, but also in terms of how much money these Canadian teams want to spend, and that's, you know, that's 7 out of the 30 teams, hopefully not 32 soon enough, in the market. When we come back, we're going to talk about trade possibilities, Ezzy, get value that you'd get for him, advanced stats, and then comparables, and give you the final number on Dustin Byfuglien and his contract value. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290, quarter to 10 on a beautiful Saturday morning at the end of August after last week's stormy weather. Ezzy, before we get to the remaining discussion on Dustin Byfuglien's contract extension, or prospective contract extension, this segment's brought to you by the Linen Market Dental Center, official dentist of Legal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. You know, Ezzy, we left off talking about the idea of a distraction. And I think, you know, you hear Bob Harley talk about having the veterans locked up more so than the young players. That's a factor, I think, in terms of culture in the room and also arbitration eligibility and knowing you're going to have the players on the team or have the right to keep them on your team as opposed to go to any other teams in the National Hockey League, which Byfuglien and Ladd would have the option of doing if they're not signed by July 1st of next year. That leads me to the possibility of a trade. And, I mean, it has to be something that you have explored, because if you just can't sign these guys, can the Jets allow valuable players, players, both of them being more valuable than Michael Frolik, who left for nothing, leave for nothing again? I mean, we've seen it with Zdeno Chara in Ottawa. We've seen it with good teams losing big-time guys for nothing. It sets them back. Maybe not initially, or maybe they bounce back within a few years. But the value you can obtain for a guy like that, unless you win the Cup that year, you're going to lose out.
Yeah, and in the article you mentioned Zach Parise as well.
Another one.
Who left four summers ago to join Ryan Suter in Minnesota there. I don't think you can, Rich. And that's why, you know, I've said all along, I think there's a good chance that Dustin Byfuglien is re-signed in Winnipeg, but there's obviously that chance that he's traded because of the fact that they have to get his contract into their framework, if you want to call it that, or how they see their salary projecting in the next 4 to 5 years, knowing that Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele and others, Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele are the big ones there. Those guys are going into their final year of their entry-level deals, so they'll sign bridge deals or they'll sign long-term contracts. We don't know, but the point is 3 or 4 years from now, the salary cap structure of the Winnipeg Jets is going to be a lot different than it is now.
Absolutely.
Does Tobias Enstrom fit into that long-term plan? He's got 3 years left on his deal. Does he fit in? Do they want to be paying him that much money when they're paying Tyler Myers that much money? So, you know, to answer your question, Rich, they absolutely cannot let Dustin Byfuglien go for nothing. So you either have to sign him or trade him before the trade deadline. And the argument all along that you've made, and I agree, is that you probably get more for Dustin Byfuglien if you trade him now than you would towards the trade deadline. It's arguable, and the Jason Spezza trade that you use is a good comparable, because you look at the Jason Spezza trade from Dallas to Dallas, I should say, from Ottawa, and you look at, you know, Alec Chiasson and, you know, the prospect and the draft pick, and you say, did Ottawa get enough for Jason Spezza? Well, Jason Spezza was going to leave. It was clear that Jason Spezza had enough of being the captain in Ottawa. He had enough of that, so they got basically what they could. So in the sense, I think he can
reject a trade, which he did to Nashville,
right?
And how Byfuglien can reject a trade to five teams,
right? And that's a good point. So
every win, though, Ezzy, every win that you get when the season starts, it's harder to trade him.
I agree. When the team is doing well, I think Dustin Byfuglien's value is arguably at an all-time high right now. I think he's coming off of his best regular season. I mean, sure, when the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup in 2010, he probably had his best playoffs. I don't know if he'll ever duplicate that. And he was playing forward at the time in 2010 with Chicago. But now with the Jets, he's established himself, you know, and you know, we'll get into the numbers more, Rich. But the way he was playing last year, you had the feeling last year, if you were a Jets fan or you watched the Jets, that every time Dustin Byfuglien was on the ice, he had the ability to make a big hit, score a big goal. He was an impact player.
Last season, based on the scoring chance charting by WarOnIce.com, he generated 50 more scoring chances when on the ice than his opposition did. 51 more. So, and 56 plus differential, more scoring chances than against in high danger scoring areas. Very impressive numbers. Now, that's last year, and they had the seasons before him weren't as impressive. But you take into account other factors we look at. His points per game per 60 minutes, which is just taking into account how much you play per game and apportioning, you know, and utilizing it, not comparing it to other players who have played more and all that stuff. Even strength, ice time, when you're creating 5-on-5. Defense-wise, he's with the likes of Brent Burns, who also has played some forward, Victor Hedman, Tyson Barrie, and Erik Karlsson. I mean, serious company in terms of generating offense. And you look at that, I mean, you look at his rate of goal production. You're talking about big-time players that he is better than in these stats. And then you look at it, you say, oh, has he been especially lucky? Well, he hasn't been in terms of percentages. So all of those factors, and it's not as if, and another thing that people look at is where he starts face-off plays, too much in the offensive zone, too often in the defensive zone. He's not getting that much favorable use. He's not in face-offs. It's not like he's starting a ton of plays in the offensive zone on an offensive zone face-off. I mean, Paul Maurice and even Claude Noel before him, he starts a lower percentage of shifts in the offensive zone relative to all the rest of his teammates, and that's what the article talks about. And then as he's talking about stats and who he's playing with as a factor. He's played with Enstrom, obviously they both can move the puck real well. He's played a significant amount of time with Grant Clitsam and then Ben Sherratt this year. And I don't think when we're talking about the top four of those two guys, with due respect, and Sherratt had a nice, impressive rookie year last year. You know, it's not Duncan Keith. I'm not talking about Drew Doughty here. I mean, he is playing, and he's elevating a lot of the time, his defense partner. So in all those factors only, I think, enhance his value. I mean, there are some things that are going to take away from his value. Don't get me wrong. But I think what enhances his value is there are more of those things than there are, I think, aspects of his game that are drawbacks. And especially when you talk about free agency, as much as you have a few drawbacks to your game, if you have, you know, 30 things that you're good at and 10 that you're bad at, the good are going to outweigh the bad, obviously, and you're going to get big-time money. And that's why I think he's going to cash in if he hits UFA status.
Yeah, and the advanced stats just don't lie, Rich. And, you know, you mentioned this in the first line of the advanced stats. Of all defensemen who have played more than 2,000 minutes over the last two seasons, he ranks fifth amongst all defensemen as far as point production goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned Erik Karlsson, Victor Hedman, Brent Burns, and Tyson Barrie. Only four defensemen are ahead of him. And then you look at the goals, which are 0.57 goals per 60 minutes time on ice, is second to only Brent Burns. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it shows you that he is elite, and there aren't many defensemen who have an impact on the game offensively like he does. And then you throw in, you know, and, you know, sure, you know, Buff, you know, is not your prototypical shutdown defenseman. He struggles, you know, when he gets flat-footed and, you know, when he's on the ice for sure. Too long. He can't play Duncan Keith minutes, like you said, Rich. He can't play 30 minutes.
He can't.
You usually want Buff between 20, 22 minutes, I think we'd agree, and that's with power play time. You know, once in a while, you can get up to 25 minutes, but ideally, you'd probably want him playing in the low 20s. But when he's out there, he makes an impact on the ice. I think that's the key. Defensemen who can score 15, 20 goals are extremely rare. They've always been rare, but even in this day and age when you don't have any forwards cracking the 90-point barrier, you know, if Dustin Byfuglien's healthy, you expect him to be around 45 or 50 points, and for a defenseman, that's going to put him probably in the top 10.
Look at Johnny Boychuk's contract that he signed as. He's 31 years old right now. He signed a 7-year extension with the Islanders, okay? Byfuglien had more points than him, generated more shots, and played more ice time, except for shorthanded last year. And he made $6 million per year, Boychuk did, on a 7-year deal, similar age. Boychuk's a physical player, not as dynamic offensively, although I think better than people give him credit for. Like, to me, that's a starting point for the discussion. You know, there's a bottom point I referenced in the article of Andre Sekera, and even Mike Green, who's exclusively an offensive player, taken down from top pairing defenseman Washington over the years to be behind Carlson and Niskanen last year and played in really only offensive situations and not against tough offensive competitors, you know, against the other team's top players. He gets $6 million for 3 years each. $6 million a year for 3 years. So if I'm Dustin Byfuglien, I'm saying, well, hold on a second. I'm more effective than him. I'm arguably better offensively than him. I'm certainly more physical. I can play forward, and I can play more minutes against bigger players and better players in the opposition. So, I mean, $6 million a year, I'm worth $7 million.
Yeah, and you can't argue with it because the comparables that you used, Letang, Anton Strahlman, Johnny Boychuk, Mike Green, he's really kind of a hybrid of all of those defensemen.
All right-handed guys, too.
I would argue, Rich, that there isn't a Dustin Byfuglien comparable. And what I mean by that is I don't think there's any player in the NHL that does what he does. When you combine the physicality and the goal scoring, I don't think anybody can do what he can do. And that goes back to the versatility, what you said. And he can play forward if you need him to. So I think, you know, Mike Green, you could argue, is the best comparable. Johnny Boychuk would probably be second for me. And, yeah, Chris Letang, you got to throw in there. He's had his injury problems.
But
he's certainly not the physical player. You know, he can throw the body, but he's not as big as Byfuglien, and he just doesn't have that impact. Byfuglien can change the outcome of a game with a hit. He really can. So I think when you're talking about Byfuglien, he's a unique player.
So the final number here, Izzy, because we've got to go up,
okay,
we got a
sure.
break coming.
Yep.
6 years, $7 million is what I thought was fair market value for Byfuglien. Do you think the Jets will give it to him, and do you think the Jets should give it to him?
I have absolutely no idea, especially...
hold on, we're on the radio, right?
Yeah, now that we're getting into September.
Sing on.
You know, I would think the Jets would be more comfortable, Rich, with a 3 or 4 year deal. As you mentioned, Mike Green signed a 3 year deal with the Detroit Red Wings. So I would think that it would be closer to a 4 year deal. But when you factor in that Buff is a fan favorite here and, you know, he's really shown that he can do everything for the Jets, wouldn't be surprised if he gets that 5-6 year deal. So I think you're bang on. I think he is a $7 million defenseman. And I think, you know, even if he makes a little bit more, I think that Jets fans will be happy that you know, Jets management spent that money on him.
I don't think they should sign him to that, and I don't think they will sign him to that, and that's not to say I don't think Dustin Byfuglien's a heck of a defenseman. I just think based on the way the roster is and how much money you spend on the back end, what your needs are, I just don't think it fits. But I can't say that I can tell you this. There are a few players I love watching more than Dustin Byfuglien. That's it for the first hour. When we come back, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch will join us. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the show on the last Saturday of August, 2015, Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel and joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. Rory McGarn doing a great job as our op. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, the official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Izzy, it's been last season for the Columbus Blue Jackets was injury ravaged, but many had high hopes for the team, and they did show some flashes at the end of the season. It's been an interesting offseason in Columbus, and for that reason, we brought in Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch to talk about that. Aaron, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
We haven't had you on in a while, Aaron. You've been a staple guest for us for a long time. Oh. And we want to start off with, I mean, the Brandon Saad trade, I think, is the main starting point for the Columbus Blue Jackets and their offseason.
Right.
What made the team identify Saad? I mean, his age and his skating and his offense. But why was Columbus able to get Saad out of Chicago, whereas other teams were not?
Well, I honestly, I think this is a case where this is like a husband that goes out to get milk and bread and comes home with a new car, if I can put it that way. I don't think the Blue Jackets had any idea, and I don't think other teams around the league did, that Brandon Saad was going to be available at some point. Now, the Blackhawks have always had a thing for Artem Anisimov. They have a crying need for a second-line center. I think they identified Columbus as a team that had multiple pieces that could send back to them that would not – they obviously salary cap problems. They needed bodies. Columbus had cheap bodies. They also had a prospect, Marco Dano, that Chicago liked. And Anisimov was the guy that the Blackhawks have been trying to get for a while. So I think Chicago identified them as a fit pretty quickly. And Columbus is, you know, they're going to win this year. They think they're going to win this year. But this is still an organization that is always trying to get younger, deeper, high-end talent. And a guy like Brandon Saad doesn't hit the market very often. So were they willing to pay him? Yes, they were. And they were willing to give up the pieces to get him.
You know, what about, you watch Artem Anisimov, Aaron, you know, obviously quite a bit over the past few seasons when he was acquired from the Rangers. To me, when I was looking at the trade, and you mentioned obviously there are other players and prospects involved, but I see the contract Chicago gave Anisimov at 4.55 per year. Now, that kicks in after next season. And I see the contract Columbus gave Saad at $6 million. That's not that much of a difference.
It's not. I mean, I think there's a benefit in the guy that can play center ice. Those guys aren't easy to find. At that level, Anisimov is a really good defensive checking, always in the right position sort of centerman. I see him more on a team as good as the Blackhawks. He should be the third line guy, but you're not embarrassed with him at the number two spot. He's a good fit, but I see what you're saying. Brandon Saad, 22 years old, he's won two cups. I still think his best hockey is ahead of him, and while he's not going to be playing with Taves and Kane, he's going to be playing in Columbus with Ryan Johansson and probably Foligno on the other side. That's not a bad situation either. I think the numbers that this kid has put up are going to continue to climb.
Aaron, do you think one of the reasons why you mentioned Marco Dano and one of the reasons why they were able to trade him is because they've got some of those other high-end prospects like Kirby Reichel, you know, and Sonny Milano was another guy. Is that one of the reasons why they were able to move a guy like Dano?
Yeah, I think it made it easier, for sure. They love Dano, absolutely love Dano. I think the guy that they fancied even above Dano within the organization is Alexander Wennberg, and he's really the player who allowed them to facilitate the trade. He proved last year with all of the injuries that the Blue Jackets had. He got up to a slow start, but as the season moved along, he sort of got up on top of his pedals and started moving. Wennberg can play center in the NHL now. They think he's their third line center this year. If they didn't believe that, it would have been really difficult for them to part with Anisimov in any trade. I think Wenberg's arrival in the NHL is what made Anisimov expendable. It was not easy for them to trade Dano. If you remember, he's one of those, they had three first round draft picks a few years back, Wennberg, Dano, Reichel. I think Reichel's available too to the right taker, but Dano was hard for them to get their arms around trading him, but then you look at what Brandon Saad brings to the table, and you know, those are the kind of guys you got to give up if you're going to bring a player back like that.
Aaron, you mentioned Alexander Wennberg kind of slotting in there on the third line, and Gregory Campbell, that was kind of a unheralded signing by the Columbus Blue Jackets. So when you look at up the middle now with Johansson, Dubinsky, Wennberg, and Campbell, I guess, you know, you must like what you see up the middle there for the Columbus Blue Jackets in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, it's really deep. I still want to see something from Wennberg. I'm really interested to see what his second year step is going to be. We've all seen players regress in their second year. Frankly, Wennberg looked overmatched the first half of last season. And it, you know what? He probably wouldn't have been in Columbus if it weren't for all of the injuries last season. Young player, first time in the NHL, you sort of expect those growing pains. I'm really interested to see what he becomes this year. He's going to be playing on a third line, probably with Hartnell, maybe with Clarkson, kind of an odd third line. It's more of a hybrid scoring line, if you will. I'm not sure exactly what that line is going to look like, how they're going to use it. But Wennberg is one of their wild cards going into next year, where if he takes into this year, I should say. Heck, we're almost here. If he takes that significant step forward, boy, they could be even more dangerous.
Joined by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, breaking down the Columbus Blue Jackets offseason on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Aaron, look at the roster of the Blue Jackets, and it's odd. You know, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews are going to be taking in $10.5 million per year starting this year on their cap hit. The Columbus Blue Jackets defense looks like it's making about $13 million.
Yes, bargain shopping. You know, they've stuck with these guys. I mean, they think there is some real upside on this group. And really, what it hinges on, this whole group, hinges on the health of Ryan Murray. And if Ryan Murray is healthy, this is an absolute top four defenseman. Very soon, a top pairing defenseman. A 25-minute-a-game, a minute-a-night guy. But, you know, you feel almost foolish saying that, because first he's got to prove that he can stay healthy. He's missed so much time over the last three seasons. Whenever he plays, he looks like a really special player, and everything settles down on the back end. But they've got to keep him in the lineup. If he's in there, I think the whole look of that group changes, and it's a pretty solid group with some real upside, especially in the lower pairs. With Connaughton looked really good last year when he came over from Dallas. There are times where I love Dalton Prout's game. There are times where Dalton Prout struggles to be an NHL defenseman. If he settles down, then that third pair could be fine. And Cody Goligoff is another guy that never has gotten much of a chance. I was a bit surprised that he stuck with this organization and re-signed. But they like the player, and I'm not sure where he fits again this year, but there's real competition going on for the fifth and sixth spots.
You know, you look at the Columbus, we talk about the roster construction. Obviously, there's some ties to St. Louis, Jarmo Kekalainen having been there, John Davidson. You know that, of course, Aaron. And you look at the forwards, big and tough, and they're becoming more mobile, too. I mean, they're probably as tough as you're going to get in terms of playing against them as defenders. But the roster's a little bit different from St. Louis in that you have the big money goaltender, and we talked earlier about the fact that there's not a lot of money spent on defense. Is that a conscious effort to kind of change that?
I don't think so. I don't think it is. I think it's, you know, they're turning this team over a little bit. There's still Scott Housen's imprint is still on this team, and I mean that in a complimentary way. He's the guy who brought so many of these big pieces in, Foligno and Bobrovsky, and drafted Johansson and Murray. But you know, they've changed a little bit deeper and more talented up front. But those are not easy pieces to change. Jack Johnson's had a long-term contract. Tootin has been here a long time. David Savard, they've given him some space to prove himself, and he's done it. You know, they've only been here not long. I mean, it's hard to change those guys over. I think they would like to add a 25-minute defenseman, a big-time top four guy. But again, I think Ryan Murray, if he can stay healthy, I think he's that guy, and he may already be here. So you're looking at Murray, Tootin, Savard, and Jack Johnson as your top four. If Savard continues to improve, if Murray stays healthy, solid. Not spectacular, but solid.
Aaron, I think you'd agree that the expectations for the Columbus Blue Jackets are to make the playoffs. But with the acquisition of Brandon Saad, signing Gregory Campbell, and as you mentioned, knowing that Ryan Murray is going to be healthy, and you know the rest of the team's going to be healthy, because the Columbus Blue Jackets last year, you know, as you know, had injury problems that really many teams never face. Do you think it's safe to say that the expectations amongst John Davidson, Jarmo Kekalainen, and Todd Richards, you think it's not only to make the playoffs, but to go far in the playoffs?
I do. Yeah. I mean, it's for a long time, Columbus Blue Jackets fans, it seems like you're almost speaking out of turn, because the first challenge here, it's only happened twice, the first challenge should be to make the playoffs. But I, you know, when you're up against the salary cap as this team is, they're really, really up there. And you've got the young talent that this team has. I think the time is nigh to not just make the playoffs, but win a playoff series. Take it from there. That's the hurdle that this franchise now has to clear, that the playoffs aren't too big for them, that they belong, that they're good enough, that they're not the little brother anymore, they're not the new kid on the block, that they're the team that can establish and win and be the better team than some of these marquee franchises that they've always been chasing. I think Jarmo Kekalainen and John Davidson are absolutely building this team, not to make the playoffs and to make people happy and to sell tickets. I think they want to win the Stanley Cup. I think that's their goal. And I, you know, they were probably the two people that were the least thrilled with the six-game series loss to Pittsburgh 2 years ago. Happy to be in the playoffs, great hockey, yeah. But this is not the end point. This is not the goal. This is just the first step to where they want to go. I really do think that is the mindset of the organization, and I think that'll become more apparent here in the next couple of years.
We should talk about Manitoba ties. We haven't talked about Matt Calvert-Aaron signing his 3-year extension in early July for $6.6 million total, $2.2 million cap hit. What do you think of the value on that deal?
Well, I like it. I sound like I'm talking about Ryan Murray still. I like it, especially if he stays healthy. And that's been a challenge for Calvert. Not the biggest guy in the world. He plays like the biggest guy in the world. Throws his body around recklessly. I like it. The price on that ticket goes up pretty high in the third year, which tells me what they think of Matt Calvert, what their expectations are. He looks like a fourth-line guy for them, just the way that this team is constructed this year. But I think his talent level is way beyond that. I think he's a player that if the other two pieces are right, I think he's absolutely a second-line talent left winger. He can bring that sort of speed and an element to a line. I love the player. He's got to stay in the lineup, though.
Final question for you, Aaron. You obviously covered the team since they came into the league, been doing it for a long time and doing it really well. Scott Housen, you mentioned before, deserves some credit for the way the roster is currently put together. But can you talk about the contrast in styles? I know Housen took a while to make decisions, and Jarmo Kekäläinen seems a little bit more bold in his approach. Is that fair to say?
It is. It is. I think the one thing that must be recognized is that Jarmo has John Davidson above him. And he has John Davidson between him and the ownership. And Scott Housen was the head of hockey operations and the point man for ownership. Until John Davidson arrived, the Blue Jackets never had that person between the general manager and the owner. And I don't know a guy, frankly, who would give you more confidence having your back and being between you and the owner than John Davidson. Already a guy who in Columbus carries enormous amount of cachet. And if John Davidson tells the owner that this is so, well, damn it, it is so. There's no questioning there. That is a buffer that brings so much confidence to that chair. I think that is immeasurable, and I think that's the big difference.
Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, thanks very much for joining us on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
Excellent, boys. Thanks for having me.
Aaron, always a pleasure. When we come back, been a bunch of contract extensions this week. Cody Eakin just signed it yesterday. Manitoba boy again. We just talked about Matt Calvert. A couple other contract extensions. We haven't talked about Christian Ehrhoff signing in L.A. Much to talk about, even if it is the end of August. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Show's flying by, Ezzy. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, August 29th. Amazingly, middle of the summer. Is this the end of the summer now? It's probably end of the summer. Before
I take exception with that, because really the summer goes well into September.
Yeah, technically it does. Like,
people always think the summer's ending because it's the end of August. It goes till end of September, early October, doesn't it? Like I know this. Like I'm not talking about the solstice and the equinox and that stuff. I'm just talking about as far as kind of like, you know, the weather and no.
We'll talk about that in a second. This segment's brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba's 40th annual luncheon. Philanthropy, easy for me to say, is a key pillar in the strong community. For over a half a century, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba has been making a philanthropic impact, providing funding to both Jewish and non-Jewish community organizations alike. On October 29th, join the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba at its 40th annual luncheon, featuring a keynote address from Rick Frost, CEO of the Winnipeg Foundation, on the topic of sustaining our culture of generosity. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, or to purchase tickets to the 40th anniversary luncheon, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520. Izzy, I don't know if it's fall or summer, but it's been a little bit of an active week. And let's start off with Cody Eakin. He's going to be the third-line center on the Dallas Stars next year behind Tyler Seguin and Jason Spezza, who we spoke about earlier in the show. Eakin was acquired by the Dallas Stars in the Mike Ribeiro trade. It turned out to be quite a trade for them because Ribeiro really didn't work out or stay long-term in Washington and had some issues there. He signs a four-year deal. What are your thoughts on, and I should specify the terms, it's $3.5 million per year. What's your thoughts on this extension for what appears to be the team's third-line center and a guy who, $3.85 million per year, a guy who, in my opinion, is a smart player, maybe not your prototypical third-line center in terms of size and physicality, but probably, I'd say, a smarter hockey sense-wise than your typical third-line guy.
Yeah, you know I really like Cody Eakin, very good hockey player. Still relatively young at 24 years old, and he formed kind of a good 1-2 Manitoba punch when Ryan Garbutt was there. But, of course, Ryan Garbutt was part of the trade that sent him to Chicago. You know, and you mentioned, Richie, that he's the third-line center there, and it's pretty clear, you know, behind the players that they have there in the top six that he slots in as the third-line center, which I think is good for him that he knows his role there. But, you know, you mentioned his versatility and that he's not the biggest player. He's a player, though, that when he goes out there, he gives you everything on every shift. And he has the ability, if you need him, to play on the penalty kill. He's not maybe going to get as much power play time because you've got Jamie Benn and all the players. We know all the
There's
players.
There's so much talent there.
There's so much talent there, and you throw in Patrick Sharp into the mix. But Cody Eakin's a guy that he's a guy that you get the most from him. And, you know, the four-year contract extension, I think he's being rewarded for the three good years that he's had in Dallas. And, you know, he'll probably play you know, I know Brett Ritchie is coming up there in Dallas. So he's played a lot with Colton Sevier there on the third line. You know, he's played a little bit with Travis Moen there. The Dallas Stars right now, their top six is set there, especially with Valerie Nichushkin coming back. Mm-hmm. He'll slot in there likely on the second line.
That's an important addition, too. He's a very talented player.
He's a really good hockey player, and they missed him last year. And you know, we've talked about this before, Rich. I think if Dallas is healthy, and, you know, they have John Klingberg, which they had for a good part of the season, but if they have, you know, one more defenseman there, and that's why, you know, they
like some of the young guys, too.
Yes, they do. And, you know, that was the big Achilles heel. And the goaltending wasn't good enough for them last year. I think they're a playoff team last year, and I think they're going to be a competitive team this year. And if as long as they stay healthy and they get more goaltending, that's why they brought in Antti Niemi to be their backup, they're going to be a dangerous team. And Eakin's a big part of that. He's a guy that slots in on their third line and has been a big part of their success.
He's 24 years old. As he had 40 points last year, 19 goals, 21 assists. The year prior, he had 16 goals and 19 assists for 35 points. So pretty consistent output there. His shooting percentage was a tad higher last year than the year prior, but, I mean, no massive red flags here. And he plays in all situations, which you alluded to last year, 17 minutes and 11 seconds per game total. 13, almost 14 minutes at even strength. He can play at even strength in that role, create some offense. He can also play on the power play. Played a minute 20, and he played 2 minutes per game at shorthanded play. So you think about it. You know, Tyler Seguin and Jason Spezza are not going to be your defensively aware players. And I think Eakin has even probably more offensive skill to put up better numbers. He's going to take on a different role with this team. And I think that's a credit to him. He says, okay, I want to win. And I think this is a good contract for both team and for player. I think probably even better for team, but I respect the fact that the player wants to be a part of it. So, apparently you don't want to say anything about that. Moving on to other contracts signed this week. Christian Ehrhoff signs with the Los Angeles Kings 1 year, $1.5 million. Christian Ehrhoff's game is very offensively gifted player. He can skate. Defensively, he's a bit of a train wreck as he in his own zone. I mean, he's not going to battle you on the board. He's not going to make the best reads. But he can skate and move the puck. I thought it's interesting to have him on a team that isn't the fastest and plays a pretty aggressive style. It almost seems like it's not a fit in L.A., but they wanted to add some more puck-moving ability to the back end after Slava Voynov's issues and then losing Andre Sequeira to free agency. What are your thoughts on this transaction?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of Christian Ehrhoff, Rich, but as you mentioned, they've had such turnover on defense that they really needed to bring in an established NHL defenseman, and that's what you get in Christian Ehrhoff. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work out for him in Pittsburgh, but he comes in, he's going to add a little bit of offense that they missed with Slava Voynov, and quite frankly, they're going to miss without Andre Sequeira, who they gave up the first-round draft pick to get. So I think it's low risk as far as the LA Kings go, but this LA Kings team, to me, you look at the defense, mm-hmm. and the defense that was in place when the LA Kings won the Stanley Cup in 2013, what they have now is a far cry from what they had in 2013. So I know they just signed a Russian defenseman, I forget his name, but they're gonna try a few things on defense there. But this LA Kings team that was built from the net out with Jonathan Quick, you lose Robin Regier, who's your big lumbering defensive defenseman. You lose Slava Voynov, who was your second pairing offensive defenseman, but also good defensively, and then you've lost
Willie Mitchell,
Matt Green was still there.
Yeah.
But, you talk about Willie Mitchell and, you losing him. And I mean, they still have some work to do there.
The Russian defenseman you mentioned is Demir Sherepzhanov. I might be pronouncing that wrong, so I apologize if I am. He had 9 goals and 25 assists in 66 games in the OHL with the Owen Sound Attack last season. I don't know anything about the guy. The Kings obviously think highly enough of him to sign him to an entry-level deal, but we don't know. The Kings also actually invited Peter Budaj to camp on a PTO. Now, keep in mind that the Kings did sign Jonas Enroth, who was in Dallas last year and in Buffalo, smaller netminder, but... And one, I don't know if he's big enough to be an effective NHL netminder. He certainly gives it a workmanlike effort, but it's tough to play in the NHL when every goaltender is collapsing down and they're taking up such a big portion of the net just by being there. So Peter Budaj is going to provide some competition there between the pipes, but we know Jonathan Quick is the main guy there. There's a couple other contracts. Elias Lindholm, I thought, was an interesting one. He signed a 2-year deal with the Carolina Hurricanes. And if you look at the term, it's $2.5 million this year. So the term is 2 years. If you look at the quantum, $2.5 million this year and $2.9 million a season after. He's still an RFA. He's coming off his entry-level deal. I thought he took steps forward last year and a bit of a mess of a team just based on the fact that their forward group was just awful. He got a lot stronger on the puck, and I thought he played a lot more confident game. What do you think of his upside?
Yeah, well, Rich, you mentioned that he took a step forward last year, and we've had John Forslund on the show, and he speaks very highly. John Forslund, of course, is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Carolina Hurricanes, and he's talked very highly of him. He's a player that you've seen flashes of what he can deliver, and it's tough. I always find. To evaluate players coming out of a year in which the team really struggled. And that's what makes,
especially young players.
He's only 20 years old, high draft pick, but he's a guy that is definitely a shoot-first type of player, and he has playmaking ability as well, but he's a very talented player. And when you look at the Carolina Hurricanes, they've had trouble, turning their high draft picks into quality NHL players.
Absolutely.
And so when you have Lindholm come along and, he slots in as your second line center behind Eric Staal, and there's that kind of debate about what Eric Staal's long-term future is in Carolina. They look at Lindholm and I bet they'd like a little bit more out of him right now, but he's still young and you can't really give him a long-term contract at this point because of the uncertainty, I think, with what's going on with the Staal brothers, with Jeff Skinner, Cam Ward. They've tried to move all of these players, that's been reported. And Lindholm is one of those players that they still, I think, have higher hopes for, and that's probably why he got the bridge deal.
Interesting to note, Ezzy, a couple of things. You mentioned Elias Lindholm's age. He's 20. His entry-level deal is not up until next year. So if I'm Elias Lindholm's agent, why am I having him sign a contract now? I don't know the answer to that. We talked about how much money he's going to be making. The cap, of course, will be $2.7 million. But if Elias Lindholm comes into the season and gets 25, 30 goals, he's going to make more money than that. I realize after his first year, after his entry-level deal, he won't be eligible for arbitration. But the Hurricanes have no offensive talent, really, and young offensive talent. You know, Jeff Skinner's young still, but aside from that, they're pretty limited. So he'd have a lot of leverage. I mean, he had 17 goals last year. So I think that's a good deal for Ron Francis to sign. And you have to wonder what the agent's thinking there. I like Elias Lindholm. I think that's a good deal for the Carolina Hurricanes. Ezzie, you mentioned Eric Staal, and Cam Ward. They're taking an odd, to me, an odd approach to that situation in terms of, you mentioned Eric Staal, and Eric Staal is a pending UFA after this upcoming season, as Bufflin and Ladd are here in Winnipeg. And then you have Cam Ward also, which, do you really know what Cam Ward is? But it is a bit of an odd situation, I think, in Carolina. And I know some of the players, they've expressed a desire at times to stay. We'll see. You know, losing can change your opinion. Obviously, Eric Staal's got his brother there, which is a factor as well. But Adam Cracknell in Vancouver quickly signs a two-year deal with the Canucks. Physical player. They're certainly changing the culture there, right?
Yeah, and he's a player that's kind of bounced between the AHL and the NHL, spent most of last year in the AHL. But you're right, Rich. I mean, the Vancouver Canucks, the Achilles heel of the Vancouver Canucks going back to 2011 against the Boston Bruins was that they weren't tough enough, right? The Sedins were getting pushed around. And I think, as you mentioned, Rich, they are making a concerted effort to get tougher, bring in a guy like Brandon Prust for Zach Cassian. Even though Zach Cassian himself can hold his own weight, you know, Brandon Prust is a known kind of tough guy around the NHL.
I meant one-year, two-way deal. I misspoke, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. And, you know, so Cracknell's a guy that he's one of those energy guys that when you put him in the lineup, he'll play on your most likely fourth line. And you put him in the lineup, and you know, if he needs to, he can drop the gloves. And if he chips in a goal, that's just gravy, right? But I think you're right. I think, you know, Willie Desjardins coming in there, with Jim Benning, they're trying to change the culture and really make this team more difficult to play against. And I think even last year, making the playoffs for the Vancouver Canucks was impressive. I certainly didn't think the Canucks were making the playoffs last year.
Neither did I.
I thought, you know, L.A., Dallas, and Colorado, I had them ahead of the Vancouver Canucks, and I had them ahead of the Flames and Jets. I should mention that, too. But they took strides. You know, solid in goal. That defense to me is the big question mark. You know, they're kind of moving on, know, post Kevin Bieksa era, if you want to call it that. Defense is still good, but that I think this team will score goals. The Canucks will score goals, and sometimes you don't know where those goals are coming from after the Sedins and Verbata and a few others. But I think the team is going in the right direction, that's for sure.
Before we go to break, guys, we've got some tickets to give away to the Puck Talks event September 15th at the Pint. Caller number 3 is going to get tickets, free tickets, to the Puck Talks event. Give it a call, 780-1290, 204-780-1290. When we come back, Ezzie asks a good question in the show plan. There's something wrong with the St. Louis Blues. We'll discuss after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
The Curved Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Legal Curve Hockey Show for Saturday, August 29th. The segment's brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop. Plus so much more, like soccer to shoes to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. Ezzy, we have...
The burgers are in the building.
I know. We're going to do a short one here because Ezzy's getting hungry. And if he takes a bite, then I have to talk for a long time and nobody wants to hear that. Turkey burgers, too. It smells real good in here. The St. Louis Blues, Ezzy. Shoulder surgery for Patrick Berglund. They invite Scott Gomez on a PTO to camp. Is he still playing, Scott Gomez? Apparently at mid-30 points last year for the New Jersey Devils, which probably explains why they changed general managers. Well, with due respect, of course, to Lou Lamoriello. And then you have Yuri Laterra's injury as well. It's been some changeover in St. Louis, Ezzy, and to me the changeover has not been where you think it might have to be, which is in net. What do you think of the team's offseason, and where do you think they're headed?
I said this last week. I think the offseason for the St. Louis Blues has been somewhat underwhelming. And
trade of Oshie, too, as well, for Brouwer.
I like that trade more for the Washington Capitals. I'm a bigger TJ Oshie fan than I am Troy Brouwer. Not to say that Troy Brouwer isn't a good hockey player, because he's the type of guy that he can score 20 goals. He can impact the game physically. But I like what TJ Oshie offers the Washington Capitals, and I think he'll fit in nicely in that top six, and he makes them a little bit more difficult to play against. But the St. Louis Blues team, Richie, I don't think they're going to be impacted too negatively without Patrick Berglund in the lineup. Patrick Berglund's a good hockey player, but this team is super skilled, and you know, you can go up and down the lineup, you know, starting with Vladimir Tarasenko, and then you've got kind of the staples of the St. Louis Blues team: Backes, Steen, Jaden Schwartz. You know, Paul Stastny's fit in nicely there. But
does it hurt you up the middle though? Because Letera's a center, he's injured. Berglund's a center, can play wing. I mean, now you're looking at what your top two. Backes played some wing last year too. So are you moving now? Stastny is going to elevate, which they hope. His back is moving back to the middle, which I think is fine. But then Brodziak's going to be playing, going from fourth line to third line. I mean, all your pieces are kind of all over the place.
Yep, and Brodziak was a guy that they just signed this year. You know, was a really good player for the Minnesota Wild. But you're right, Rich. I mean, you're going to have to move some players around. But this team is still very skilled. The St. Louis Blues are going to be a playoff team this year. They might win the division again this year. The question is, when it gets around to playoff time, that's the age-old question, is this team going to be able to get goals from enough of their forwards? And you know,
can they get goaltending? And are they fast enough? There's a lot of questions
there. Exactly. And Ken Hitchcock has 1 year left on his contract. He signed a one-year contract extension, right? This is a big year for the St. Louis Blues. And you know, you mentioned, you know, Scotty Gomez, the connections, obviously, with Martin Brodeur, the assistant GM there. That's why he brought Scott Gomez in.
He's not getting them any faster. No, they don't need to get bigger, but he's not making them any faster.
No, absolutely not. Scott Gomez is a guy that is a stopgap measure that plays on your most likely your third or fourth line to give you a little bit of offense. And, you know, Jori Lehterä, they expect him to be back, hopefully, for the first week of the regular season. But
you never know.
And Lehterä, to be honest with you, didn't impress me that much when I saw him on the St. Louis Blues. I mean, he's a decent player.
He's a straight-ahead, up-and-down kind of player.
Yeah.
And I know, with the players he was playing with, Ezzie on the wings there, you know, at times with Schwartz, I thought it was fine because he did the dirty work. Not that Schwartz won't. He's very good in the corners. But the idea is he kept it simple. But I agree with you. He's not a guy who's going to create a ton of offense for them.
And for the St. Louis Blues prospects, who really wins is a guy like Robbie Fabry or a Ty Ratty. Those guys, you know, because of these injuries, they might get into more NHL games. Ty Ratty, of course, played with Nick Petan in Portland. So players like this, you know, maybe they get a better chance on the third line with the injuries to Berglund, because as you mentioned, you might have to bring up a guy like Kyle Brodziak or you know, you have to move a player from wing to center because of the injuries you have, Rich. But to me, this St. Louis Blues team is still constructed very similarly to the way they were constructed last year. And you mentioned that, Rich, and this is a team that, you know, you're going to see a lot of 2-1, 3-2 games against the St. Louis Blues because Hitchcock always has them playing very well defensively. But in the playoffs, when it gets opened up a little bit more and you have faster teams like the Ducks and Hawks, they run into problems.
They've had that problem. Last year, they've had 109 points in 82 games, first place. You think they're able to get first place this year?
I'm not going to – I hate predictions, especially at this point in the
well,
summer.
Well, this is their roster, though, right?
But I mean, I'd be surprised if they finished any lower than third in the division.
I'd be surprised if they finished first, though.
Well,
anybody in that division probably finished first. Seriously, I think it's that big a crapshoot. I don't think – so. I mean, there's a chance, of course, but I think they're taking a step back right now.
I think – I agree with you, Rich. I think they're taking a step back from last year, especially their regular season performance, and there are better teams in that division. I mean, Colorado won the division 2 years ago and then took a major step back, but there are teams like Dallas who have improved. So you're right. I can't disagree with that. I don't think it's going to be as easy to win the division this year. It wasn't easy last year. I mean, Chicago didn't have a good regular season last year by Chicago standards, but they turned it up come playoff time. So I still think this is a playoff team, but as you mentioned, Rich, this is still a team that has those question marks starting in goal and once you get down into those depth positions.
For me, its problem is when you have the question marks, they're continually the same question marks year after year. That's what makes me kind of wonder what exactly is going on there. The turkey burgers are getting not cold. They smell great. So we're going to go to break. Congrats to Rob Somerville, winner of the Puck Talks ticket. We'll get in contact with Rob, make sure he's there at the Pint on September 15th. But when we come back, we're going to kick off Le Burger Week with Bernstein's Deli. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Last segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Last segment for August, Ezzy. It's been a fun month. God, three people always say, what do you have to talk about in August? Lots to talk about. Not worried about that. Jets still have to sign Andrew Ladd and Bufflin, or at least deal with them in some way or another. This segment, though, is obviously brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And let me tell you, this segment is certainly brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, because Bernstein's Deli is partaking in Le Burger Week, a really popular burger with competition. Aaron, and we have Aaron from Bernstein's Deli is in the studio. He's brought us Bernstein's entry into Le Burger Week. But first, Aaron, can you give us the background on what Le Burger Week is and has become?
Sure. So Le Burger Week is a citywide competition. It takes place inside the restaurants that are participating. There's 40 restaurants this year.
Wow.
It's just a really fun week for places, high-end places, or everything else to put their riff on a burger and try and make it accessible to everyone. It's run by an app this year, so if you download the Le Burger Week app, it'll give you a list of restaurants by proximity, full description of their burgers, and just a good way to get people out and trying places in the city and, you know, seeing everything that's out there.
And when does it start?
It's the first week of September, so it starts Tuesday, and we actually will be one of the first restaurants opening since we open at 8 a.m., so that'll be great. Hopefully we'll get a little crowd to start the day like we did last year and get things rolling.
Well, Aaron, I'll be there at 7:55.
Okay. Well, yeah, and actually just one other quick announcement I'd like to make. We've gotten approval for our liquor license.
Awesome.
So we can't start serving alcohol until 9 a.m., but on that Tuesday
that?
We will have alcohol available, which will be another nice thing. It's great to pair a beer with a burger for sure.
Absolutely, and you brought the burger. Your entry into Le Burger Week has been brought into studio. I mean, we always get pretty excited when there's food brought into studio. Rory's pretty excited. Drew's actually salivating on the plane right now while he's going out of town. Thankfully, he's not here because there wouldn't be any for the rest of us. Ezzy's pretty excited. So tell listeners and tell us what's on this burger that we're about to taste.
Sure. Maybe you guys can start taking a bite and I'll just describe what you're having. So
sounds like a great idea.
First off, it's a turkey burger. We went a little bit on the healthier side this year. The patty itself has sun-dried tomato and lemon in it. And we're trying to do sort of like a 90s theme of ingredients, so things that we saw on lots of menus throughout the 90s but are still delicious and relevant today. So it's topped with goat cheese and spinach, roasted red peppers, pesto mayo, and then we've made our own whole wheat bun that has everything bagel spice on top. It's not a bagel, it just has the spice that you would see on an everything bagel. So there's a lot of flavor going on there. It's really juicy. Yeah, and the name of the burger is Don't Have a Cowman Turkey Burger, which is also a 90s Simpsons reference most of us should be aware of.
Okay, Richie, I just took my first big bite. Ring the bell, it's over. Just give Bernstein's Deli the title right now. You mentioned, you know, the patty and how juicy it is being. It's also very, it's got a zesty kind of taste.
There's lemon zest in
that,
there.
That lemon, that lemon zest.
Yes, you are. You're like Marion Warhop.
But
it's an incredible burger. It's a lot different than last year's burger.
Well, we went with the indulgent breakfast burger last year, and people loved it, but, you know, it was not something that you could eat 7 days in a row.
That's true.
This is more of an everyday approachable burger that should appeal to lots of people.
I'm loving the everything bagel. I'm loving that aspect of it. Last year with the challah bread, it was great. But this everything bagel is great.
It's, I love how you're talking and periscoping at the same time.
It's fresh. Yeah, like I wish you could see this burger right now. You'll have to wait until next
week. It's on Periscope.
Yeah, go on Periscope right now. But this burger, I'm going to take another bite. Richie, you keep talking. I'm going in for a second bite.
Well, last year you guys were what? Out of the four, I don't know how many entries there were last year.
There were 35 last year.
35, so there's five more this year.
Approximately, yeah.
And you guys were second.
Last year we finished second place, and we weren't open late at night. We didn't serve alcohol, and it was our first year in the competition, which I believe is in its fourth year, maybe third this year. So, really exciting. Brought a lot of new faces in that we hadn't seen before, and just a really fun week.
We're calling on our listeners to get in there and make Bernstein's number one this year because, I mean... the problem is when you look over at Ezzy, he's got goat cheese all over his face right now. But the goal is for our listeners to support Bernstein's and get it up to number one and prove, Ezzy, you're halfway done your burger here. You're not even halfway down the segment. Now remember, guys, I just want to qualify. Ezra Ginsberg has part of a pierogi contest recently. So
I was going to bring that up, actually. Like, the show could spin off into a professional eating show in some respects with the way Ezzy's going.
It's unbelievable. Rory, what are your thoughts here?
You know what? I love Le Burger Week. I always try to get out and try a few different places. Yeah. And I must say, Bernstein's Deli has set the bar extremely high. And that goat cheese, that just awesome. Ties everything in there together. It's beautiful.
Thanks so much.
Love it.
And Aaron, you guys, like, the thing about Le Burger Week that I love is that all the restaurants, like, support each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you guys go to different restaurants and they come to your restaurant. Tell us more about that.
Well, that's sort of just, you know, I took my own initiative last year. Our staff's working hard. We have lots of people working extra this week because of the crowd. So if I get an opportunity, I duck out at some point. And every day I try to pick up a burger from another restaurant for the staff to try so they can be exposed to everything. They're stuck, you know, in River Heights at our place. So, I like to look at everything that's out there and try and find something similar, something different, bring it all to our staff, let them be a part of everything to do with it. And, you know, supporting other restaurants is great. There's, you know, plenty of business to go around everywhere. Certainly,
absolutely.
You know, come to us, go other places, come back to us. But
I mean, exactly. I know that this week we had our fantasy football poll this week, but people were talking about Le Burger Week. Like, it's become a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly a thing. I know it's in Toronto, it's in Montreal, it's in Winnipeg. So, I mean, Winnipeg's totally ahead of the game here. 200 different restaurants are part of this competition. And like
in
event.
The overall, yeah.
Overall, yeah. 40, you said, so 40 or so in Winnipeg, but 200. That's a pretty good portion from Winnipeg as to the, in regards to the 200 total, considering how big Toronto and Montreal. All right, Ezzy, what do you want?
I'm not just saying this because Aaron brought these burgers to us, but I think this might be the best burger I've ever had, and I'm with Rory.
I think the funny part is
the goat cheese is incredible.
I throw it to you to talk about the, what extension was it? It wasn't Ehrhoff. We talked about Cody Eakin. You're just quiet. Then we talk about the burger.
I was hungry.
Then you're talking about the burger. You're going on and on.
I could talk about this burger for two segments, Richie. It's just incredible. And it's healthier. Not that the burger, like, I don't like an unhealthy burger. Because I'll eat a big unhealthy burger any day of the week. But, you know, you've got the spinach. You've got the roasted red peppers. You know, it's the everything bagel. You know, it's incredible. And it's not too filling. Like, I feel like I could eat four of these.
Well, you ate 25 pierogies in 7 minutes.
Yeah, his stomach might still be stretched out a little after that.
And I finished seventh in that competition.
Seventh out of nine.
Yeah. So I should have been able to eat at least 40.
Should we maybe campaign Hustler to start a burger eating competition next year?
Well, I'll tell you this much, Rich. If we're doing how many burgers I could eat in 7 minutes, I'm not eating many more than three probably of these because this is a full burger, but it's light enough that you feel like you could still have a good time afterwards.
I'm waiting for you to break down the forecheck and the defensive part of we should break down the forecheck and of trying to attack Ezzy to get the burger from him, which I don't think would be as difficult as you might think. You throw a couple guys at him, you can probably take it out of his hands. But this is a great event, Aaron. I appreciate you guys coming in here and supplying us with the burgers. I'm sure Rory appreciates it. We appreciate it. So tease off on Tuesday.
Tuesday, 8 a.m. goes the whole week, so it ends on Labor Day. And, it's going to be great. 8 a.m. for us. Other places as they open.
And it'll be available to pick it up or eat in?
Eat in or take away. Exactly, yeah.
Absolutely. That's great. So Bernstein's Deli, great to bring food to us here in the studio, Legal Curve Hockey Show, taking part in Le Burger Week. We encourage you to do so, too. It's great for the community. And it's a great time. End of the summer. We talked about it, or as Ezzy says, kind of the middle of the summer. We're not really sure about that. As he continues to periscope me. I'm being periscoped. Just people have
double
a picture of it. And if
you're
not on Periscope, or if you even know what Periscope is, I'm being periscoped from Aaron's side, from the Bernstein's Deli account, and from the Illegal Curve side. I don't really know what's going on. But anyhow, it's been an interesting show this week. We broke down a lot. We're not going to go just yet, Rory. Don't worry. We still have a little bit of time. It's been an interesting show this week. We broke down the Dustin Byfuglien contract earlier. And we'll give you, Aaron, why don't we give you your shot here? You're a hockey fan.
Yeah.
You're a supporter of the show. Ezzy and I talked about Dustin Byfuglien's contract extension. You think it's going to get done? Let's get a fan perspective here. You think the Jets are going to sign Dustin Byfuglien before the season starts? And if not, do you think they're going to trade him?
Well, I think that we have a lot of good pieces in place in our farm system, and you know, we might want to wait and see through training camp how some of those younger players are going to fit in, and if we feel that we really need to keep Byfuglien long term. You know, certainly he's got 3 or 4 good years or more left in him, and could be a big piece of a puzzle if we're going to make a big push. But I don't see him doing anything before the preseason starts, at least.
That's the thing. I mean, we're talking preseason starting camp over in Penticton in BC starting relatively soon. The season's going to get underway. And when you're trying to set your lineup, and you know, I think teams, if anything, they probably have more players under, you know, in the stable at the beginning of the season and training camp. So they have to get rid of players more so than try and bring some guys in to fill the holes. Now, having said that, injuries do occur. Mm-hmm. And it might open up spots. Not only do injuries occur in terms of creating needs, injuries also occur in the create salary cap space. That's the biggest thing. But Dustin Byfuglien here, $5.2 million. If he were to be moved elsewhere, the team has to be able to take in that cap dollars. And there are teams that are up against the cap right now. They have to make sure, and they're allowed to be 10% over until the season begins. They need to make sure that they reduce the amount of money they have on the cap. So there's a lot of moving parts here, and it's interesting.
Richie, I think that we should just send Buff 10 of these burgers from Bernstein's Deli, and I don't think there's any way he doesn't re-sign for 5 years with the Winnipeg Jets.
For five? You know what? Okay, I'm going to leave it there. Kristen Odlin of the Calgary Herald joined us. Thank you to her. Aaron Portsline, the Columbus Dispatch.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming in. It was great.
Thanks for coming and bringing these burgers here.
Go to Bernstein's. Don't have a cowman. Turkey burger for Rory McGoran. Ezra Ginsberg. Got a little Bruce Springsteen here. Aaron Bernstein. Stay tuned. 11:30 a.m. Central Time. The Toronto Blue Jays take on the Detroit Tigers. Pregame 11:30. First pitch, 12:07. We'll see you next week, Labor Day weekend. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.